All right. Good morning, Confidential Computing. I'm going to talk about memory isolation in Texas Instruments microcontrollers. And I imagine that at this point, the audience is kind of divided in half, where half of you are thinking, wait, there's confidential computing in Texas Instruments? And the other half is thinking, why would you need confidential computing for a calculator? But as it turns out, Texas Instruments is more than just a calculator company. They actually have a very rich history as kind of a computing company. So they were the first company to manufacture a silicon transistor. And 4 years later, they were also the inventors of the integrated circuit. And so they not only produce calculators, but also other systems where sometimes I think maybe having some kind of security for this type of stuff is not the worst idea in the world. So I don't know if you see it from the back, but they also develop laser guidance systems for precision guided munitions, so ballistic missiles. So let's talk about what type of security they have. I'm not going to go too deep into the details, but it's kind of different than this kind of confidential VM infrastructure that we've seen in the previous talks as well. So I will explain it a little bit. This is what we saw in the previous talks. So this is kind of the traditional high-end desktop or server environment where you have actually many different ways of isolating code and data. You can have processes that are running in parallel. You can have in-process enclaves. You can have confidential VMs. And all of these rely on the hardware to provide some kind of isolation between these different entities within the computer. And this is implemented through things like virtual memory, virtualization, privileged rings, and so on. But in this case, the device that I'm going to talk about is this MSP430 microcontroller. And this has none of this. It's actually a long line of microcontrollers, but the specific device that I'm going to talk about was released in 2014. At the time when it was released, I think it was actually the lowest power microcontroller in the entire world, but it still has some security features. As an example, it has AEX acceleration, it has a memory protection unit, and it also has this intellectual property encapsulation feature that I'm going to focus on in this talk, IPE for short. And so the way this works is that you don't have virtual memory, you don't have virtualization, any of these things on this device. It's a flat unified address space. All the code and data on the device shares this one physical address range. And what IPE allows you to do is you can write two addresses to two registers, and this will mark one area of memory that is going to be the protected area. And you can put code and data in here. It's a von Neumann architecture, so it's mixed code and data. So here you can put your intellectual properties such as proprietary code or secret data such as encryption keys or nuclear launch codes, whatever you use this device for. And then what IPE actually enforces is that if you run code from inside this enclave, you can access and manipulate the data that's also inside. But if you have code running anywhere outside this address range, then it basically cannot access anything inside the enclave. And this is not only enforced for code, but also for JTAG debuggers and direct memory access. So it's kind of a program counter-based access control. So in certain ways, it's a bit similar to Intel SGX or other similar DEs. But how secure is it? So now I kind of explained how it's supposed to work. But we performed an in-depth security analysis into this device. And we found that, unfortunately, it doesn't work that well. Again, I'm not going to go into the details. Basically, what we did is we looked at a lot of prior literature in trying to attack confidential computing architectures. And we try to recreate some of these attacks, see which ones apply, see which ones are successful on this device. And all the ones that are highlighted, so almost all of the rows in the table, we could recreate on this device. So we could have both architectural and microarchitectural side-channel attacks successfully executed on this device. And the security guarantees are basically completely broken as a result. And important to note that these are all software-based attacks. So even if you don't necessarily have physical access to the device, it might still be possible to take over if you have some way of injecting code into the device. And actually, so I said that we try to recreate existing attacks, but that's not the entirety of what we did, because this very first line in the row, the very first row in the table, controlled call corruption, it's a completely novel attack that we discovered on this device. And again, I will not go into the details. You can talk to me later if you're interested in how this actually works. But very shortly, it allows you to corrupt memory anywhere inside this IP region, and you can kind of force it to leak its full contents. And this is something that TI also released an advisory about. They gave it a CVSS score of high, so they also seem to agree that it's pretty important. And then probably the natural question that you're asking is, can we mitigate against these attacks? Can we do anything to kind of restore the security on these devices? And well, it turns out if you give researchers enough coffee, anything is possible. It's not very nice, but it works. So here again, the details are not important, but we managed to repurpose one of these other security features, the memory protection unit, to kind of provide some of the security guarantees that IP is supposed to provide, but fails. And yeah, with the added complexity of more software, having to trust more software, and also reducing the applicable attacker model a little bit, because we cannot defend against attackers that have control over the debugger in this case, we can still protect the code and the data in the IP region in most scenarios. So everything that I talked about so far, the attacks, this mitigation framework, and the academic paper that we wrote about this with all the details, you can find at that QR code. But I have to disappoint you, this is not the end of the talk yet. Because after we were done with this research, we were wondering, what could we do if we could actually change the hardware? Because most of these bugs, well, most of these vulnerabilities stem from bugs that could be fixed in hardware. But yeah, how would we do that? This MSP430, it's used a bit in research, but because the hardware is obviously closed source, there is no design files or anything available for these devices, it's kind of hard to prototype any kind of changes to it. There's no simulator that you can run, so even to just run the exploits, you need to have the physical device. But already in 2009, a new soft core was released called OpenMSP430, which is a simple Verilog design that implements the same MSP430 architecture. And it's relatively easy to work with. And you can see that there's a lot of research publications that also extended this OpenMSP430 core. And actually, all of these added some kind of memory isolation feature to it. So clearly, there's a need for this, and there's some interest in this topic. But it's still very scattered, and all of them are kind of random, independent implementations of this memory isolation. So then what we came up with is we took the base OpenMSP430 core, and we implemented the IP specification on it. We tried to make it as binary compatible as possible, so that you can run existing programs that were meant to run on the TI microcontroller on this framework. And we also added one interesting new feature, which is this firmware here. So already on the TI devices, there's some small protected boot code that runs that actually sets up the protection whenever you boot up the device. But this is not visible, it's not modifiable on the TI devices. But on our implementation, we wanted to make this open so that researchers can actually change this and maybe extend it to implement additional security features, mostly by just changing this small layer of trusted code instead of having to make changes to the core itself. But we also implemented all the hardware fixes that we thought would be relevant for mitigating the vulnerabilities that we found in the original design. at this point, I should ask the DevRoom organizers for the scheduling that they make, because now I can talk about OpenIPE, which is an open and extensible framework for security research on Texas Instruments IPE. And this makes it sound like a very original idea that no one else could possibly have. So stick around for the next talk if you're interested in something very similar, but on CCA, so a much broader and much bigger project. But okay, so about OpenIPE, to test out how this framework actually works and how it can be extended for additional security features, we also performed a small case study where we, again, without going into the details, we mitigated some of the architectural and side channel attacks that we discovered in the original TI boards. So there is this attack that can extract secrets from enclaves by measuring how long interrupts take. And this is something that we can mitigate by changing how interrupts are handled and how the software actually does the context switching between trusted and untrusted code. Another important aspect, if you implement something, is to write tests and make sure that everything works correctly and securely. So we did two things regarding this. First of all, we wrote a lot of small unit tests that check whether the functionality works correctly, so whether the IP specification is implemented correctly, and also whether the security is better than on the original board. So we wrote a lot of scenarios that try to replicate attacks from the original device and see that it doesn't work anymore on our implementation. And then we also care about the security of the software. These tests are more about the hardware working properly. But there's also been quite some research on how you can ensure that software that is running inside an enclave is properly secured. And what we use here is symbolic execution, which uses mathematics to check all the possible paths that your program can take and simulate those executions and see whether anything potentially dangerous is happening. And one of the tools for symbolic execution is Anger. And we actually use a framework that's built on top of Anger. It's called Pandora. It was made by one of the previous organizers of this dev room. And it was originally made for Intel SGX, where it can detect vulnerabilities that are specific to enclaves or to SGX in particular. And we adapted this to be so that it can consume these IP binaries or even our firmware code that we can potentially extend for security features and then check whether everything is protected correctly. And this tool, if it detects any kind of potential violations, it gives these nice visual reports where you can look at, there's a suspicious instruction there that can potentially leak your entire memory, so maybe you should make sure that this is working as intended. All right, so what are our goals with OpenIPE? Well, obviously, I already showed before that this seems to be an area of research that is still active, and there is some interest in this kind of memory isolation in small embedded microcontrollers. So we hope that our platform can be used as a basis for that type of research and maybe kind of unify these efforts a little bit and also contribute with things like thorough testing, because we saw that some of the research prototypes in the past were maybe not that well tested. But it's actually also a great tool for teaching, because the implementation is relatively simple. It's around 1,000 lines of Verilog code, but it can already introduce students to a lot of different concepts. So already during the presentation, I talked about memory isolation, hardware vulnerabilities, architectural, microarchitectural attacks, symbolic execution. There's a lot of areas that you can kind of easily or accessibly discover using this framework. So we are already using this in multiple thesis projects, and we're hoping to keep using this in the future. And this is actually my last slide. Here you can find the code for. So this is for all the Texas Instruments related code, the attacks and the mitigation framework. And this is the OpenIPE implementation and tests. And you can also find the links there at the bottom. And I would encourage you that if you're doing research in this area, or if you have any students or interns or whoever could possibly make use of a nice little onboarding project into Enclaves, I think it's a good starting point. And you can also find my website at the bottom, so feel free to reach out if you have any questions or want to ask for help about any of this. Thanks. Any questions? Yep.
So one of the core features of confidential computing is the attestation part. So you don't see that in here. So memory isolation doesn't provide you confidential computing by itself, right? So
yeah.
What's the attestation part?
Indeed. So the question was whether there's any attestation support, because it's an important part of confidential computing. So indeed, the original TIIP does not have anything to do with attestation. They, I think, don't even talk about it in the documentation. But
it doesn't make sense because they are not claiming it to be confidential. So you are claiming it to be confidential. So that's my question to your part rather than to Texas Instruments.
Well, they claim that it's a feature that can be used for protecting code and data. So that covers the confidentiality part, I would say. But I agree with you that attestation is also important. And we haven't really looked into it yet, but we hope that by using this extensible firmware layer that we added, we could add some software-based attestation that can be triggered and then used as a similar primitive as attestation on higher-end confidential computing architectures.
What if it's at the software layer?
I guess it depends on how you define hardware-based. So it still relies on some of the guarantees of the hardware that makes it such that you cannot tamper with the attestation. So that's provided by the confidentiality of the and the integrity of the firmware code, for example. And then relying on that, you can add attestation that is computed in software. But I think that still would function the same way. But maybe we can discuss it further.
Sure, yeah, thanks.
Yeah?
I just have a question in terms of hardware support. So you show an example of one particular text instrument microprocessor, where I guess you know it's more applicable than just
So the question is which boards are affected, basically? So there's one specific family of these MSP430 microcontrollers that have a specific type of memory, this FRAM, and these are the devices that support this IP technology. So I don't have concrete numbers for how many devices this is specifically. We tested three different CPUs that are in this family, and they were all affected. So I imagine that all of them are probably very similar to each other and maybe mostly different in terms of peripherals or something. And I would guess that they are all affected. Actually, I can go back. Maybe it's a good indication if we check what TI said. So in their security bulletin, they also say at the bottom, I don't know if you can see it from there, the affected products, and they list all, the whole family of these devices. So they probably also think that all of them are affected.
Whether
OpenIPE is targeting a specific board or a specific type of hardware. So most of it, I think, is very generic in the sense that the specification of IPE is pretty device independent, but there are some device specific specifications. So for example, where exactly the registers are in memory that you have to write to. So in this case, we took one specific board and just used those, but it's something that could be easily changed as well.